Welcome to the program for Wednesday, November 28th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, as every week at this time, it is Pentagon Solutions, where we talk to leaders both inside and outside the building about the issues the Pentagon is dealing with and potential solutions to those challenges. Today, we're focusing on sequestration, specifically a countdown to sequestration. Why American leaders could jump off the fiscal cliff. It's a new publication from the Center for a New American Security, and three of the authors of this paper are in studio with me to talk about this subject. I'm happy to welcome to our studio today Jake Stokes, Nora Bensahel, and Joel Smith from the Center for a New American Security. Thank you all very much for being here today, folks. It's a pleasure to have you. Nora, I'll start with you. What's the genesis of this project? Why is this something that you thought you had something to say, and why is it this particular message that you wanted to get out?
We started thinking about this report because we thought that there was a great assumption in a lot of the defense community that because there is opposition from both parties in Congress to the defense portions of sequestration, that a lot of people were assuming that that meant that sequestration was automatically somehow going to be avoided. And when we looked at sequestration not just on its own, but as part of the larger fiscal cliff issues that are at stake, we realized that sequestration and defense sequestration in particular is only a small percentage of the overall dollars at stake.
And as we think about that, as we have these conversations, gentlemen, this is one of the issues that, Nora brings up that I think confuses a lot of people, especially folks who don't follow these kinds of things on a daily basis. Jake, I'll ask you, what's the difference between the broader fiscal cliff issues that we're facing and the sequestration issues that, to me, seem to be more narrowly applicable?
Sure. Well, so ultimately, the fiscal cliff refers to tax cuts and then spending cuts and then tax increases. And sequestration refers to just over $100 billion of spending cuts that will happen on January 1st and that would have been spent otherwise in the next year, whereas the rest of the fiscal cliff is different tax cut or tax increase provisions. And ultimately, the defense sequester is only about one-ninth the size of the total fiscal cliff.
So, and thrown into this, we have any number of stories on that we've seen cross today about the defense authorization bill that Congress is considering. That's mixed in. There are any number of moving parts. Joel, what's the process by which we should be looking at all of those moving parts and trying to nail them down and file them so we can analyze them accurately, do you think?
Well, obviously, before the end of the year, a lot of things need to get done. DOD needs to get a budget, and that's first up on plate through the NDAA, the authorization. What we really try to focus on here was the cuts to defense couched in this greater conversation of the fiscal cliff and the impact that there's been a fair amount of conversation happening about the potential of these defense cuts, but when we couch that into the greater fiscal cliff and the amount, like Jake said, it's only the fiscal cliff represent nine times the amount of the actual defense cuts. So when you take those together, the defense cuts are actually much smaller part.
And what that means is that Congress isn't going to be able to deal with sequestration just on its own merits. It means that it's going to be buried in the much larger conversation about the proper balance between government revenues and government spending. And because the amounts are so small relative to the total dollar figure, it's very unlikely that any politicians, regardless of what they think about sequestration, are likely to put a whole lot of political capital into solving just that problem. It's going to be a bargaining chip in the greater debate about the proper balance between revenues and spending. And DOD people, people who work in the defense industry, people who think about defense issues, don't usually understand that because they see the defense sequestration cuts as so deeply problematic.
Why do you think that is? Because that, I think you're getting right at the heart of the real problem here, which is an honest discussion about how much money the government should take in and how much it should put out. I mean, that's really the crux of it.
Right. I think a lot of that is because there is an ongoing debate within Congress and the American people about what the right level of spending is on the Defense Department. Those who are in the business, who follow these issues regularly, know that the sequestration amounts, if applied as sequestration says, which is equal cuts to every program, project and account, that that would be very, very significant for DOD, that that would require very deep cuts in the programs that remain. We can talk about the details of why that works, because that's not always very well understood either. But I think that, you know, people who understand the degree of what those cuts would do to DOD spending and how it would affect capabilities are genuinely concerned, but they're looking at that issue, not at the broader national picture, because that's not the issues that they tend to follow on a day-to-day basis.
This policy brief includes a crystallization of the effects of sequestration as you see them that I think is one of the most effective that I've read in all the material that I've gone through about this. And I want to talk about that in a little bit. But I want to pursue that concept a little bit more, if I could, Nora. Just the idea that all of the conversation that we've seen so far, it seems to me at least, about sequestration has been how much of this cut should be and so on. We're starting to learn now that the Pentagon and the other federal agencies will have some latitude, a little bit of latitude, to be able to reprogram money as they do at any other time. What do you think that might mean, especially for the contracting community? I mean, one of the things that we know is that any money that's already been obligated is going to be obligated. That money's going to be spent. So right off the top, I think this image of January 2nd, we go over a cliff and that's the end of the world seems to me to be a bit overdone. Am I missing something in this in that analogy?
Well, as always, it's complicated, right? Right now, the legislation does state that for fiscal 13 and the defense cuts that are enacted will require every program, project, and activity to be cut by an equal percentage. That excludes military pay and benefits. The president had the authority to exempt that. He already has. So take those off the table, but for everything else, by law, the cuts must be apportioned equally. That is a terrible way to implement cuts because it doesn't give you any strategic flexibility whatsoever to do it. And so both the Department of Defense, industry, pretty much any observer looking at this says that's a bad way to do business. The reason why it's in the law, we all sort of forget this because the debate has come so far since then, but sequestration was originally on August 2nd, 2011, designed to provide an incentive for the super committee to reach an agreement.
But now, turned out not to be so super.
Right. It obviously failed. But that's why there was this penalty, which is so drastic, that was in it, was to try to help get a compromise in the super committee. Since that obviously failed, it doesn't make any sense anymore that now that you may have to actually implement it to do it in that way. So you may see some, even though all of these issues are going to be debated together in Congress, and you can't separate out sequestration in terms of the dollars amount from the Bush era tax cuts and the right level of government spending, it is possible that you could see a separate piece of legislation somewhere during the lame duck session that at least addresses that frees DOD from the requirement to apportion the cuts equally across all accounts. That's what the military leaders want. What a lot of them have said is, look, you know, we want the defense budget to stay as high as possible, but what we really want even more than that is predictability. You tell us, you know, how much we're going to have, and you give us the flexibility to figure out how to implement that. That's what the all four chiefs of the military services have been saying. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, that's what they care about most going into a January 3rd scenario, even if sequestration, the dollar figure stays on the books, is having the flexibility to implement it as they wish.
All right. I mentioned that you've provided some analysis of the potential effects of sequestration. You've also outlined a couple of scenarios, three to be precise, that you foresee potentially happening. Let's talk about the effects potentially when we come back and then go through those scenarios as we continue our conversation with the Center for a New American Security. The publication is called Countdown to Sequestration, Why American Leaders Could Jump Off the Fiscal Cliff. It's linked now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and our conversation continues in a moment.
What are the key strategic priorities for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection? How is CBP pursuing innovative security strategies in its field operations? What is CBP doing to be more efficient and effective in meeting its mission? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Kevin McAleenan, Acting Assistant Commissioner, Office of Field Operations at CBP, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Hey, federal employees. Choose the plan we believe is altogether better for your health. Kaiser Permanente. Get the inside story on better care. Join a Kaiser Permanente physician for a complimentary Fed webinar scheduled most Wednesdays through December 5th. Go to kp.org/midatlantic to register for a webinar on Kaiser Permanente federal benefits. That's kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States, Inc., 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Here's Dr. Robert Norris, Chief Architect, NGA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data in Government, Progress and Best Practices, sponsored by Lockheed Martin.
Over the next 5 to 10 years, what I see is that the intelligence community will be implementing its IT enterprise, which will allow for the sharing of data across agencies in an enhanced way. We'll see a sharing of infrastructure as far as cloud computing, networks, desktop environments.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
It happens millions of times every day. Cyber attacks aimed at the networks that are the brains and backbone of every government program and military mission. At Lockheed Martin, we understand the importance of cybersecurity. That's why we build security into every system we develop and integrate. Assuring that our customers can carry out their missions without disruptions is all a question of how. And it is the how that makes all the difference. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Leading the way to better vision, United Healthcare Vision understands the importance of good eyesight for you and your family. That's why their vision programs offer federal enrollees and their families a convenient mix of independent and retail providers and industry-leading benefits for glasses, contacts, and discounts on LASIK procedures. And new for 2013, standard photochromic lenses that provide 100% UV protection from the sun's damaging rays will be covered at no additional cost. The FedVIP open season period for federal employees and retirees is November 12th through December 10th. Don't miss out on this opportunity to protect your most precious gift, the gift of sight. For more information about their benefit plans and how to enroll, visit United Healthcare Vision on the web at myuhcvision.com/FedVIP. If you want industry-leading vision benefits and a convenient provider network, look no further than United Healthcare Vision this open season.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Thursday's Federal Drive. The administration says it avoided tens of billions of dollars in improper payments last year. We'll talk to Controller Danny Werfel about how they did it and how you count money you didn't spend. Plus, the top veterans hiring official is retiring from the VA itself. We'll get a download of wisdom from Mary Santiago. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Pentagon Solutions Today with Nora Bensahel, Joel Smith, and Jake Stokes from the Center for a New American Security talking about their new policy brief, Countdown to Sequestration, Why American Leaders Could Jump Off the Fiscal Cliff. One of the things, as I mentioned earlier, that you've done here is you've really crystallized the potential effects of sequestration for the rest of this fiscal year in a way that I had not seen before. You focus on four primary areas here, and I'd like to touch on each one of these. Let's start with the civilian workforce. Now, we're hearing potential scenarios of layoffs, furloughs. The layoffs seem to be less and less likely. But Jake, I'll start with you. What are the potential scenarios for employees at DOD, both permanent and temporary? Because a lot of members of Congress that are focused on shrinking the Defense Department are looking at what they call the back office functions of DOD, and this seems like that's exactly where they'd be looking.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the long term that there is going to be more focus on the back office, and that's not going to be clear through the sequestration process or the broader fiscal cliff issues. What we do know with regards to sequestration is that, you know, DoD civilians are funded through outlays in this fiscal year. And ultimately, what's going to be cut here is money spent in this year. And so if the money has to get cut, it has to come from somewhere. And coming from those accounts is just, that's where a lot of the money is, so that's where a lot of the money is going to come from. I think there are another analyst has estimated that it could be up to 13.7% of the DoD workforce, which is a significant slice. How DoD decides to deal with that, whether furloughs or layoffs, is going to it's not clear at the moment. I think that obviously they would probably prefer furloughs and try to bring the people who have been furloughed back after a deal is made, but, you know, it's kind of hard to say.
And legislation plays into that, too. We're learning today that Ben Cardin and Sherrod Brown of Ohio are introducing an amendment to the Defense Authorization Act that would prevent civilian layoffs and furloughs. So there are all kinds of twists and turns here, Joel, where this could go, I suppose.
Yeah, well, when you get into civilian workforce, it's really touchy because, as Jake said, it's majority funded through funding for this year. And when you get down to it, you know, some estimates have come out at around 13% of the civilian workforce could get furloughed. But as those decisions are delayed down the road, the impact of those decisions become greater to where sequestration is implemented. By the end of the year, you could see a much greater percentage of the civilian workforce and overall defense spending impacted through sequestration.
The overall number of DoD civilians, quite bluntly, is going to have to come down over the next few years. It has grown substantially over the past decade, outpacing the growth on the military side of the house, in fact. So the number of DoD civilians overall, in terms of the overall savings, is an area that is going to get targeted for savings. The problem with the sequestration effects on it is it forces those changes to happen very rapidly in fiscal 2013 rather than spacing them out.
And giving the leadership there an opportunity to shape the workforce, because they're trying to grow the acquisition workforce and they're trying to grow the cybersecurity workforce and trying to do any number of maneuvers throughout the entire agency.
That's exactly right. That's why I'm skeptical that any legislation to prevent the number of civilians from getting cut overall, you know, even if for some reason it passes over the next year or two, over the long term, that is something that absolutely has to come down. But doing it in this way, with sequestration goes into effect, the civilian workforce is probably the area that is at most risk of being targeted right away. Some of the other issues, and I know we'll talk about them, you can delay some of the effects for some time without the pain being felt quite as much.
Now, the second potential effect that you're writing about in this is military health care. Secretary Gates started talking about this using the term eating us alive as far as what the DOD spends on health care. And every single time that anybody has tried to do anything about that, it dies in Congress really quickly because it's easy to say, oh, you can't raise TRICARE premiums for the troops.
So this, what we're talking about here isn't about TRICARE. That's a retirement benefit. Those are retirement health care benefits. And those are things that have been explicitly taken off the table when the president exempted pay and benefits because that falls as a benefit. What we're talking about here is health care services for active duty forces, which nobody has talked about cutting. Nobody's planning to cut that. But the effect of this mechanism, which requires you to cut from every program, project, and activity, is that operations and maintenance funds will be cut by an equal amount as all other cuts, and for a variety of fairly obscure budgeting reasons, healthcare for active duty military personnel are paid from through operations and maintenance accounts. So nobody's trying to reduce the amount that's being spent on healthcare for our, you know, troops on active duty. But the effect of this, if the sequestration cuts go through with equal, you know, cuts required, will be that the military healthcare services will have to make some very tough choices about how to allocate its resources for fiscal 2013, because those healthcare services will get cut if operations and maintenance cuts are taken.
Okay, there's a great point there that I want to follow up on in a little bit, but I want to move on to program cancellations, which is another area that you're writing about here. And you write something that we mentioned earlier. Sequestration doesn't affect prior year funding obligations, so already authorized purchases will go ahead as scheduled. Now, what I derive from that is that some of what we're hearing that the various companies are taking action when it comes to personnel and layoffs and so on in the defense industrial base they may say that they're related to fears about sequestration, but they're not. It's difficult to directly attribute them to sequestration. Is that fair to say?
I'm not sure if it's completely fair, just because I think the long terms of defense companies are likely preparing for what has historically happened, which is that once conflict ends, the defense budgets come down. And that's a lot of what they're preparing for. There's been a lot of kind of back and forth about the particulars of sequestration. What we found is that program cancellations are going to be slower and more delayed. If sequestration went into effect and stayed into effect, both for this year and then out all the way to 2017, those would come through. They just wouldn't all happen in the next coming year because for the exact sort of opposite reason of the personnel accounts is that most of these programs have been funded in prior years and that money has to run out before the programs get canceled.
I think one of the key points that Jake's trying to get at is we've heard comments that, and I'm sure you've heard them as well, that sequestration would cause us to buy 2/3 of a ship. Or, you know, we get a whole ship except for 10%, so you can't buy the back end. But as Jake said, so sequestration affects affects FY13 spending. And what that means is it affects the FY13 budget through the base budget, through war spending, and through unobligated funds from previous years. For procurement, when you have a program that's already in contract, that spending is already locked in. It will be spent. Those ships will be procured. So the idea that you can only buy a certain percentage of a total ship doesn't necessarily pass the test. What the effects would be in FY13 spending terms that the items that you're trying to acquire would likely increase in cost over time, and the amount of time it would take to buy those items would extend as well, would be the large result of that.
So we'd see a stretch. The programs that are already begun would be completed. We just might see different timelines, and we might see different execution strategies. Am I hearing it right?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. All right. One of the things that you touch on here when talking about military end strength, the fourth of these 4 points, is something that I heard a little bit of discussion on the Hill when it first appeared that the supercommittee wasn't going to be able to make a deal. And that is, well, that's okay. We'll take the money that will have to be cut through sequestration. We'll stick it in the OCO. We'll stick it in the Overseas Contingency Operations Budget. And DOD won't see an actual loss of funding. What do we know now about how the Overseas Contingency Operation Budget might be affected by all of this? And does some mechanism exist to either prevent that from happening or to facilitate that happening?
No, overall, the OCO budget is subject to sequestration as well. So what happens when you deal with the base budget and the war budget in practice is that they all go into the same place. They're done differently in Congress, but they all go into the same coffers with regards to DOD. And so ultimately, sequestration as a process, as we were talking about before, really touches on every part of the federal government, and it takes a holistic look at defense, both the base budget and the war budget. And so there you can move things around and in practice, that's been the case for all of 10 years, but you're only going to be able to do so much of it. Eventually, there's going to be less money there, period.
All right. One final thought on this before we get into some of these scenarios, and that is what I think I'm hearing you say, Nora, is a similar theme to what I've heard other places, which is a couple of things. Budget's going to come down over the next decade to 20 years in the Defense Department. Sequestration's a bad way to do it, but these cuts are coming, and so strategic implementation of budget shifting is what you would really like to see happen, and that's why you put the scenarios together in the way that you put them. Am I reading all of this information correctly?
Yeah, that's right. And again, putting it in this broader context of the debate over, you know, government revenue and spending, I think is really important, because that's going to ultimately affect what sequestration's chances are of going through. The Department of Defense last January has already released new strategic guidance that does talk about the future shape of of the force in terms of procurement, personnel, all of those things. And it does very much show that capabilities are going to – well, I shouldn't say capabilities are going down. Procurement is going to go down and strength is going to go down, again, regardless of sequestration. But they want a little bit more flexibility on how to implement those things over the long term than just having this axe come down at the end of the year.
Dr. Nora Bensahel is Deputy Director of Studies and Senior Fellow at the Center for a New American Security. Her colleagues and co-authors of The Countdown to Sequestration, Why American Leaders Could Jump Off the Fiscal Cliff, Joel Smith and Jake Stokes, both in studio, and we'll continue our conversation about sequestration and how it may affect the Department of Defense when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hi, Audi.
Hi, Santi.
Cool new car. And look at that radio.
Finally got myself a brand new car with HD radio technology standard.
HD radio? That's the digital broadcast radio with the new HD2, HD3 channels?
Yep. And my new car has factory installed HD radio with artist experience and iTunes tagging.
Wow, this is cool. I was looking at this on HDradio.com and you did it.
Yeah, come on, let's drive.
HD radio. Now available from 28 different automobile brands and more than 150 vehicles. Go to HDradio.com for more.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Are you shopping for insurance in the same place you go to watch cat videos? Don't spend hours trolling the internet looking for cheap dental or vision plans. Call the Government Employees Benefit Association. With GEBA, you'll work with knowledgeable representatives who understand the intricacies of your government benefits and lifestyle. Based on your needs, they can offer government employees, like you, basic and enhanced policies at competitive rates. They offer comprehensive dental plans that give members the freedom to choose a dentist they know and also the ability to roll over up to $1,000 in unused benefits. With GEBA's Vision Plan, members get the advantage of competitive rates with an extensive network of ophthalmologists, optometrists, opticians, and retailers, plus an annual pair of glasses or contact lenses. Open enrollment for dental and vision plans runs from November 12th to December 17th. For more information, visit GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126 to speak with a representative today and stop wasting time searching online.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Over-salted children. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Like mom and dad, kids may wind up with high blood pressure because of what they eat. Researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention looked at data on sodium, such as in salt, for about 6,200 8 to 18-year-olds. Researcher Mary Cogswell.
Just making simple choices about the bread and cheese could save up to 400 milligrams of sodium in that bologna and cheese sandwich.
Something similar happens in adults, and it can raise adults' risks of heart disease and stroke. Cogswell says high sodium levels in kids can set them up for the same problems as they grow older. She says meals out and processed food are where most of the sodium comes from. The study is in the journal Pediatrics. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Really? One website to find all government and military events happening in our area?
It's about time. Why didn't I think of that?
I know. With GovEvents.com, it's so easy to find government and military-related events happening near me and around the world. I can search by keyword, date, location, live events versus webcasts, and so much more. And best of all, it's completely free.
Seriously? I can't believe I haven't heard of the site before. What is it again?
It's GovEvents.com, the best place to find government events that matter to you, near you.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking about sequestration, and the Center for a New American Security is focusing on a countdown to sequestration, why American leaders could jump off the fiscal cliff. Their policy brief is available through a link now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And this document includes three scenarios that could happen over the next several weeks or a month when it comes to sequestration. Dr. Nora Bensahel, Jake Stokes, and Joel Smith of CNAS, all in studio with me to talk about it. Let's start with the first one, scenario one. Congress and the president agree to a grand bargain. It seems the least likely, I have to say, of the three scenarios, Nora. Am I on target there?
You're exactly on target. We write very strongly that we think that is not likely to happen. What we mean by a grand bargain is a deal that addresses the questions about the proper government revenues versus government spending, and that is all done, signed, and tied up with a neat little bow by the time December 31st appears. We think that just the sheer number of issues that are at play in that, the fact that really there hasn't been any substantive agreement, as far as we can tell, at least from open source reports, they're still talking about the framework to discuss this in, and it's already November 28th, means that they're probably not going to finish all of this by the end of the fiscal year.
It seems like we're still in the negotiating about negotiating phase, too, like the old story about, I can't remember the end of which war, but the negotiation about what shape the table would be before you even sit down and talk about talks. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly seems where we are. And so that's why it strikes me that you're correct, that scenario one is the least likely. Can you anticipate any markers that we could see, though, that would indicate to you, well, maybe that's possible? I mean, if we get to December 5th or 10th or 15th, does any of it look like it makes any sense? Jake, you're kind of shaking your head.
Yeah,
now.
I think given the breadth and scope of the issues, and frankly just the size of them, I mean, you think about the size of the stimulus package, about $777 billion. This is dealing with over $600 billion. So it's huge, right? And ultimately, if there was going to be a deal on it, you'd have to have these very, very contentious tax issues, budget, spending, domestic, very touchy issues all decided. So, and I think if that were possible, it'd be a last minute thing ultimately, because it's going to have to go on probably behind closed doors and just be kind of done at the last minute.
All right. Scenario two says Congress and the president agreed to delay some or all of the fiscal cliff changes, possibly including the sequester. And I think of the three that you lay out here, which I think these three are pretty much the three that people believe are possible. This one, to me right now, seems the most likely given, first of all, past history. Let's delay it and let either somebody else or us worry about it later, based on that, but also based on what we're hearing leadership, the people who can make these decisions and make these deals say. It was about 2 weeks before the election. Chris Van Hollen was on this program talking about that very idea. Maybe we can come up with some kind of a fix or patch or delay. I don't remember the exact term that he used, but and we can take it, go into February or March or April. That sounds like people would be amenable to that, but I don't see what will be different given the election results that we just had about February or March than about November, Nora.
Right. I think that there are two concerns that might prevent that scenario from coming to pass. Yeah, it seems like the most likely, the most reasonable one. Buy yourself some more time. And again, Congress has had a history of doing that. One potential constraint could be that the reaction of the markets. If you really do get down to that very end of the wire, do the markets start going haywire based on the uncertainty and, frankly, a loss of confidence in the U.S. government to solve its problems? Now, that may not be that much of a consideration if, and again, it's a big if the markets may have already priced that uncertainty in. In which case you wouldn't see a huge market effect. But if the market does start reacting, I think that would be one thing that would, you know, create a lot of uncertainty and might prevent them from being able to delay, reaching agreement on a delay. The second thing is that both chambers of the Congress, both the House and the Senate, have to pass the same legislation, and the president has to be willing to sign it. And as we'll talk about in a second, there are some good incentives, not necessarily enough to ensure that this is the outcome, but there are enough incentives that some of the key political players may have from actually going off the fiscal cliff that might actually set the better terms for a long-term deal than just delaying it.
Well, you write that right at the very beginning of this brief. President, some members of both parties in Congress could realize political political benefits if the nation were to go off the fiscal cliff. And I must say that when I listen to the business media and read what they're writing, the people who are forecasting, you know, the Dow will go down 1,000 points 3 days in a row and that will make Congress realize that there's a big problem, are some of the same folks that are willing to turn up the hype whenever anything else happens, and those predictions don't always come true. So I lack a little confidence in some kind of a huge conflagration in the financial markets to drive this kind of thing. What's the benefit to whom for going off the fiscal cliff, which is your scenario number three?
Again, if you're assuming that both sides are trying to set themselves up for some sort of grand bargain deal, not necessarily by the end of the year, but to actually resolve the underlying problems and disagreements of the fiscal cliff, going off the cliff may actually set up the terms of a long-term deal better, in that taxes will go up automatically on January 2nd if Congress does not act. What that enables Republicans who are very opposed to tax increases to do is it enables taxes to go up automatically without anybody having to vote for them. Then what happens is Republicans who are concerned about this issue can claim to be voting to cut taxes in any deal that comes, because you're starting from a totally new baseline. And that may actually be enough to overcome some of the Republican opposition to any enhancements in revenues. If you let the taxes reset themselves at a higher rate, you can still be cutting taxes, even if you don't cut them to the same level of the Bush-era tax cuts, and therefore you have a new source of revenue.
Yeah, you don't cut them back. If they automatically go to 37.6, you cut them back to 37, you still look like a hero, even though you didn't go back to, what is it, 34 is the top right now.
And that actually allows you to increase, in quotation marks, mm-hmm. defense spending as well, which, you know, really both parties can get some gains from saying they cut taxes and increase defense spending.
My colleague Mike Causey tells a story of a time when he was a very young reporter, and I joke that it must have been during the Garfield administration, that he was in the gallery, the press gallery on the Hill, and some event was supposed to happen at midnight, and if it didn't happen at midnight, that was, you know, the world was going to end. It was their version of sequestration. And at 2 minutes of, he went to call into the Washington Post, who he worked for at the time, and another reporter said, "Where are you going, kid? Wait just a minute." And the sergeant at arms came out and had been instructed by either the speaker or the majority leader to turn the clocks back 15 minutes. So at the end, the deadline only comes when they decide that it comes. And when I hear you talk about some of these scenarios, that story comes back to my mind, because I could foresee some kind of a scenario where things happen that we're not able to anticipate. I want to dig into more of the potential implications of your scenario three of this going off the cliff, and how it ties back to some of the things we talked about earlier. When we come back after the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, my guests from the Center for a New American Security, Nora Bensel, Joel Smith, and Jake Stokes, and we'll continue our conversation in just a minute.
This week's Experts in Health topic is diabetic health, featuring Dr. Karen Dodge, an internal medicine provider with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Severna Park Medical Center.
Did you know that diabetes is the leading cause of kidney failure in the United States? Monitoring for diabetic kidney disease is a multi-step process and involves numerous tests and treatments. At every primary care visit, we check whether our diabetic patients need lab tests to evaluate their kidney function so we can detect problems early and act quickly to treat them. It's no surprise that Kaiser Permanente Mid-Atlantic was just ranked number one in the nation in screening for kidney disease among diabetics, outperforming all the other local and national plans.
Dr. Dodge received diabetic recognition for providing excellent diabetes care for the National Committee for Quality Assurance. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Comprehensive diabetes care, medical attention for nephropathy, rate as reported in HEDIS 2012.
From Hurricane Katrina to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the role of the National Guard has evolved greatly over the past decade. Federal News Radio takes you behind the scenes of a new D.C. gallery dedicated to telling the Guard's story, the only force with two missions, fighting wars overseas and protecting the homeland. Hear firsthand from those who served and see photos of the Guard in action. Plus, find out how you can visit the gallery. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com. Search National Guard.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive, weekday mornings, 6 to 10.
David Towner is the Director of Information Technology Management Issues at the GAO.
We're spending 55 of the $80 billion on operation, maintenance, or steady state systems. Clearly, if you look at that mix, that's not an appropriate mix. You want to be spending much more money on acquisition and development, where we're actually modernizing the federal government, not spending it on old legacy systems.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today from the Center for a New American Security, talking about their latest policy brief, Countdown to Sequestration, Why American Leaders Could Jump Off the Fiscal Cliff. Nora Bensahel, Jake Stokes, and Joel Smith, my guests in studio, talking about this issue. I do want to go back to scenario number three, which of the three scenarios you paint seems to be the one that a lot of observers believe is most likely to happen, and that is that nobody comes up with any solution. We're back where we were at the end of the supercommittee issue about a year ago, and we go off the fiscal cliff. January 2nd, it sounds, you know, everybody thinks it's going to be the end of the world. We've talked about some of the reasons why it won't be. But it strikes me that something that we talked about during the commercial break is really important to bring up here. And that is, you mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, Jake, the reasons why it would make sense for why Republicans could, in essence, go along with this idea, because they could wind up looking good on the tax cut issue. I wonder, though, based on what we saw in the election, which is everything pretty much is the same today as it was before the election and will be the same in the 113th Congress essentially as it is today, what's the incentive for the president, who campaigned on the things that he's talking about now and won convincingly, what's his incentive to try to go along with anything anybody else wants to do?
I mean, I think the incentive ultimately is that as the president, he has to govern and he has to run a government. So those would be the two reasons. And ultimately, whether it's politically advantageous for him to do one thing or another, it's going to be a big headache in the process. So I think that there is that incentive there. And he's clearly making an attempt. You know, I'm sure partisans will kind of see that in different ways, but he's clearly making something of an attempt. And ultimately he's going to have to, make a decision about that. And he's going to have to sign, if something is going to happen to delay the fiscal cliff or to avert it, it's going to have to go through him.
There, I made a list as we've been talking throughout the hour about all of the things that are coming up. We have sequestration. We have the fiscal cliff. We have the debt limit, as we talked about during the commercial break. It appears right now the time frame that we're hearing is late January, but it's my understanding that the Treasury Department has said they could stretch it out to as late as February or early March, and it wouldn't have to be dealt with until then. But then that puts us right in the middle of continuing resolution season. And then, and of course, usually the second week of February, we start to see the fiscal 2014 budget requests and those hearings start to happen. This is a bigger mess than I think a lot of people really let on, isn't it, Nora?
Absolutely. And it's the consequence of the fact that Congress has not dealt with any of these major issues really for the past 2 years. The can has been kicked down the road over and over again, and it's coming to a point where you can no longer kick the can down the road on a lot of these issues. They have to be dealt with. You can't temporarily deal with them, in any sort of comprehensive way. You might be able to buy yourself some time to reach, a bargain on this. That was our scenario, too, and we talked about that. Mm-hmm. But, ultimately, we are reaching the point where some fundamental decisions are going to have to be made about the role of the government in the economy, in the Defense Department, and in all of these various things, and dealing with the national debt all at once. It's a very, very huge load. And that's one of the reasons we are not at all optimistic and, that they can reach any sort of grand deal that ties up all of these issues before the end of the year. It's just a huge workload on issues where they haven't managed to overcome their differences in the past.
But see, when we timeline, I'll come over to you in a second, Jake, but when we timeline out all of these things, say this delay works for 2 months and it takes us to March 2nd. That means that we're right in the middle of fiscal 2014 budget requests, or maybe they get ignored And maybe they get, that's an issue that gets kicked down the road. Continuing resolution that is in effect now expires March 31st. I would hope that by the first week of March, that's at least on the radar screen as something so we're not back in shutdown mode that paralyzes the Defense Department and other federal agencies too. So however any of these scenarios play out, whichever one of them comes to pass, there's still going to be a whole lot of heavy lifting that happens next. Jake, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that it's important to note here that we're not advocating to go off the fiscal cliff. We're not advocating any positions. What we tried to do is take an analytical viewpoint and really kind of when we sat down and gamed this out and did the analysis, you know, in our offices, we saw that it was more likely than we had originally thought, and we thought it was really important to let the defense community know that this is ultimately more likely than had been conceived of before. So just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And that's the conclusion that I drew from the way that you've presented each of these scenarios. And the analysis, I think, is very helpful to this conversation. We have just one more break we're going to take. And when we come back, try to tie all of this together as we finish up with the folks from the Center for a New American Security, Dr. Nora Bensahel, Joel Smith, and Jake Stokes on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Life is long and filled with challenges. Navigating these can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Hi, this is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has been leading military personnel through difficult times to a more secure future with our low-cost life insurance and personal approach. Our policies are available to all members of the armed forces. For a free quote, call 1-877-398-2263 or find us online at AFMA.com today. That's AAFMAA.com.
Hey, federal employees. Choose the plan we believe is altogether better for your health. Kaiser Permanente. Get the inside story on better care. Join a Kaiser Permanente physician for a complimentary Fed webinar scheduled most Wednesdays through December 5th. Go to kp.org/midatlantic to register for a webinar on Kaiser Permanente federal benefits. That's kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States, Inc., 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Commuter Info Report brought to you by Commuter Connections.
Evolving technology has offered an increasing number of Washingtonians the ability to work from anywhere. But just who's most likely to telework? According to OPM's annual Status of Telework report, more male federal workers telework than females, 57% to 43%. The study also revealed that more than a third are between 50 and 59 years old. Telework has been shown to improve employee productivity and satisfaction while combating rush hour congestion. I'm Dave Dildine.
These days, keeping your money is harder than ever. Some folks are even going to extremes, like freezing money in blocks of ice, storing it under mattresses, hiding it under the litter box. We'd like to suggest something different, something easier. Sign up to Rideshare and save on gas. It'll help you keep your money.
Commuter Connections provides free ride matching and commuter services in the Washington metropolitan region. Sign up at commuterconnections.org. That's commuterconnections.org or call 800-745-RIDE.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPInc.com. That's NITPInc.com for more information.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My conversation with Dr. Nora Bensahel, Joel Smith, and Jake Stokes from the Center for a New American Security. And as we wrap up, one of the issues that we've talked about throughout the course of the hour has been
the broader conversation about determining exactly what the government spends and what they take in, one of the arguments that we've heard throughout the course of this conversation has been, well, the Defense Department spent X dollars in fiscal year 2000X, and we were safe then. Joel, why is that a specious argument, or why is that the way that we should be thinking about this, whichever way you go on this?
Yeah. In short, I would say it's internal inflation is the term I would use. Frankly, defense dollars today are worth less than they were before. Since 2001, the costs for military personnel costs have increased 40%. Acquisition costs have increased 38%. In defense healthcare terms, CBO has estimated that what we spend on the defense health program will increase nearly 5% per year for the next 10 years. So when it comes down to it, if you graph it out, you have each budget account and specifically military personnel acquisitions and O&M that are increasing at seemingly exponential rates. There's conversations on the table to decrease spending to a certain level, but when it comes to understanding the reforms that it would take and the processes that need to be put in place to reach those is where the arguments tend to break down, and we haven't advanced past that point.
So essentially the things that the Army has to do continue to escalate faster than the potential growth of the budget. Am I hearing it right?
And I'll give you just one example that's really easy to see. Healthcare programs for retirees, if you take that, that's one of the things that's off the table for sequestration, not going to be affected by that. But if the current cost growth continues, by 2039, the entire defense budget will be devoted just to that. There will not be $1 left to do anything else to protect the country.
There's some amazing things that we could talk about when it comes to those kinds of potential growths in the future. I'm really grateful for your time today to come in and talk about this issue. It's very complicated. It's not going away anytime soon, unfortunately, and I thank you for sharing your analysis with me today, folks. Dr. Nora Bensahel, Joel Smith, and Jacob Stokes of the Center for a New American Security. They are co-authors, along with General David Barno, of Countdown to Sequestration, Why American Leaders Could Jump Off the Fiscal Cliff. It's posted now. It's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. This conversation will be archived there later this afternoon as well. Hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose coming in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.